That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to musician, playwright, engineer, and rural resident of Iowa, Joe Hanek, and selections from the musical that he and his mother, Angie Hanek, produced called Farmer Song. Hanek was interviewed in a Greenwich Village cafe in New York City in August of 2007. If you would like to learn more about Farmer Song and Joe, go to farmersong.com. That's farmersong.com. Production assistance for this Sprouts show came from Nathan Moore. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact me, your air traffic controller, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's URSULA at pacifica.org. I'm Ursula Rudenberg in New York City. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.
And coming up next on Free Radio, it's the 6 to 8 p.m. edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Today is May 8th, 2008. Stay tuned for, we hope, special guest Micah Posner and the controversy around the Mission Street bicycle scene. Stay with us.
If I see another smile, I would lose my self-restraint. If I walk another mile, would surely make me faint. There are people out there screaming, tugging on a sleeve all afternoon. Why is everybody screaming? Can't they think of something else to do? We were out there on the freeway, and we thought that we'd try something new. Give the kids a little leeway, thinking that they might enjoy the view. Why are children always nauseous? Why do siblings always start a fight? Nothing worse than being nauseous. Could it be another form of spite? We took all our savings and we'll take lots of slides. We followed our cravings as we swallowed our pride. Taking the kids to Disney World. We'd been on the road for hours, thinking that we'd love to turn around, 'cause the weather looked like showers. What a time to be Orlando bound. And the kids were getting restless, which of course had put us in a funk. Why are children always restless? Maybe we could stuff them in the trunk. We stocked up on patience and we locked up our pets. We turned to the faces that we yearned to forget. We're taking the kids to Disney in lust. Everyone knows that he's tricky, probably slipped her in Mickey. Wear him what gloves, 'cause he's slick. He's strictly a mouse that you never could trust. But Mickey Mouse isn't so meek. He's on the front page of the Weekly, hanging around with some sheep. He's less than a man, but he's more than cartoon. He handles the folks so uniquely. No one gets more than a pixie. Everything's clean and squeaky in the reeky tiki 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 room. We were terrorized this morning, writing it's a small world after all. And there should have been a warning. Parents must have lots of alcohol. There's a woman in a rat suit. Tell me, does she ever get a breath? Always stuck inside a rat suit, scaring all the children half to death. they straddled our laps. We scolded the whole way as we folded our maps. We're taking the kids, we're taking the kids, we're taking the kids to Disney World. As the sun was slowly sinking, we were clearly ready for the end. Still we liked the talk in Lincoln, but not enough to ever go again. Everybody bought the mouse ears. Even though we tried to play it smart, nothing cuter than the mouse ears. We wear them like the traveler's purple heart. We're taking the kids, taking the kids, taking the kids to Disney World. Why did we ever say we'd bring them? Down here to the Magic Kingdom.
And that was Uncle Banzai from their album Men, Min, und Women, Men and Women, with all consonants, or I should say vowels, replaced by Y. Why? I don't know. Talk to Uncle Banzai. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM or www.freakradio.org if you're listening on the computer. I'm Robert Norris, and the name of the show, as ever, Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. Welcome. And we're going to be going until 8 o'clock tonight. I've received word from Micah Posner of People Power, concerned about the rights of cyclists, bicyclists on the street, and the need for protection of their safety and their rights, and actually a more sustainable transportation system generally in the area. She'll be coming into the studio to talk about the controversy arising from the recent death on Mission Street, which has been discussed in the Sentinel and on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, a website that I often write for, although not a lot recently. While we're waiting for him to show up, which should be soon, I'm going to once more venture into the old tape area. I was impressed with the one anti-war activity in the area that does seem to be having some impact. I guess there's more than one. I think local recruiters, sort of the optional information against military song sellers and hucksters on high school campuses, the effort being spearheaded by the Resource Center for Nonviolence and the groups associated with it. My hat's off to those groups in fighting the military machine. But also on campus up at UCSC, there was a very successful 422 demonstration at the job fair that happens every year and has generally been successful every year in making it clear to military recruiters that they are not welcome at the job fair or on campus. And there's always some controversy around this. I did a lot of tape recording, and unfortunately the noise level and perhaps the poor recording equipment put me in a position where a lot of the tape was unusable. But I think this is usable, though I may find it's not. So bear with me. We're about to hear Speaker Paul Ortiz, who is a professor up there, has been denied tenure, talk to the crowd in front of the job fair, the protesting and picketing, the recruiters. And actually, you weren't allowed in the job fair unless you showed ID and so forth, so I didn't attempt to get into that one, but satisfy myself with recording outside. But there was some interesting stuff that happened outside, and we'll see if it's actually audible. It's audible when I play it on the tape, but the equipment here seems to distort somewhat, so we'll see if it's actually usable. You be the judge. You can call in if you want, 427-3772. Let me know if you can actually hear it, or, more important, can't hear it, or perhaps even more important, have something to say about it one way or the other. Again, we're at the April 22nd recruiting, anti-recruiting demo that happened up at the University of California at Santa Cruz.
I call him a UCSC community, and it's a real tragedy that he's going to be leaving. Professor Paul Ortiz. Thank you very much. very much for the honor of speaking. First of all, I want to let you know I'm very proud of what you're doing. Some people will tell you, why are you doing this in Watsonville or Salinas or whatever. You need to be here. We need to be here because so much of the motive force behind militarism is at the University of California. And so this is exactly why you are right to be here protesting, exercising your rights. Many of you know I was a veteran myself. I was in the military for 4 years. And the way I got there had obviously a lot to do with a military recruiter who came to my community, working class community, Latinos, and we had no experience with college. Our parents had never went to college. My father had to go out of school in the 8th grade to actually help support his family for economic reasons. When I was a senior in high school, I took a pre-SAT exam. And I must have scored fairly well because I started getting college catalogs from universities. One of the universities I got a catalog from was the University of, was actually Notre Dame University. And just to show you how naive I was when I was 18 years of age, I got the catalog from Notre Dame. And I thought, wow, Notre Dame, it would be great to go play football there. I went to my high school counselor with a stack of catalogs from different colleges. And I said, I don't know anything about college. My parents don't really know about it. What can you tell me? And he kind of looked at me, and he said, Paul, I'll never forget this. He turned around. There was a stack of brochures behind him. One of them said, be all you can be. And he said, I think the military is the best route for a person like yourself. And this is an experience that many of us from working class communities have. And this is exactly why it's so important that you are here today. And again, I want to applaud what you're doing. I'm going to kind of turn the floor forward. But again, just to say that I'm happy to do this. I also want to thank Helen Shapiro, the provost of College Planet 10. Helen has really went out of her way to help create a space for us. So we really owe her gratitude. And I also want to thank the other students and faculty and staff who are here, because I think it's important that we acknowledge that our staff at UCSC really are the backbone of our educational experience.
Yeah.
They support us so much. They put on special programs. They educate us about these issues. So, again, thank you for listening, and just keep going strong. Thank you, Paul.
So, Jack, food not bombs, why aren't you serving food up here today?
A lot of people who serve food have other obligations, and I think that's one of the reasons Food Not Bombs can't have more servings, is because it's a pretty sparse group. So if anybody is interested in, cooking with Food Not Bombs, they should check out Chavez Co-op and drop a note in the Food Not Bombs box.
And how can they do that? How can they actually, they know nothing about the issue at all? Is there an address, an email, a phone number?
Not currently in Santa Cruz, but there's a lot of information on the web about what Food Not Bombs is and other places and they have ethics behind it.
If you want to volunteer, how do they do it?
Sure. Come to Chavez Co-op on Wednesday at 1 p.m. Or if you want to set up a meeting at a different time, come to Chavez at that time. We'll talk and begin to set you up with supplies and food and contacts and businesses to get you food.
Is there a question? Where is the Chavez Co-op?
The Chavez Co-op is at 316 Main Street on Beach Hill.
Okay, and of course, Food Not Bombs also serves about 4 o'clock at the until it's raised by the building that's going to be put up there, parking lot number 4 next to the farmer's market.
I didn't know about that building.
I think so. That's what I'm saying.
I don't know.
And for those who weren't able to hear past the background noise, I was interviewing a Food Not Bombs, a worker named Jack, who works with others to turn out a meal every Wednesday at the farmer's market, or I should say next to the farmer's market in the Drum Circle area and parking lot number 4, the area reclaimed by the community after the police and Mayor Coonerty tried to drive the drummers and people away using his new 15-minute, what I call the parking lot panic law, which makes it illegal to be in a parking lot at all unless you're walking through or have a vehicle and are parked there. Vehicle could be a bicycle or a car. And even if you do have a vehicle or a car, you're supposed to be in the process of either parking or retrieving your vehicle and can't be there for more than 15 minutes for that express purpose. Well, the people at the the Drum Circle, which has been a traditional activity where folks drum next to the farmer's market, which happens every Wednesday in Santa Cruz downtown during the afternoon, decided they would stand up to that. And though the police initially intimidated people away with the help of the Trash Orchestra, a local anarchist group, which also rehearses illegally every Sunday, or not every Sunday, every so often on Sunday afternoons, on the third floor of the River Street parking garage, with the help of Huff and with the help of other activists, including the Raging Grannies, stood their ground against the SCPD and the Mayor Coonerty's laws. And every Wednesday, you'll find people still there playing the drums and sitting under the trees and reading. And Food Not Bombs is sharing food. If you want to help Food Not Bombs, get in touch with them at the Chavez Collective. It's at 316 Main Street. Go there. It's on Beach Hill on Wednesdays around 1 o'clock if you want to be a part of that. And you can. I don't think they have an email address or a phone number yet. That's really the way to do it. Or come to the Farmers Market area, the parking lot over from the Farmers Market, the one number, which is called number 4 on the city planning maps, at essentially Cathcart and Cedar, which is sort of the nearest cross streets. You can join Food Not Bombsters. That will be, I believe, eliminated once the new 4-story parking garage, or is it a 5-story parking garage, is built over the parking lot and the trees destroyed and torn down, the public space dispersed with no alternative space provided, of course. Although they're having trouble raising the money for that, and there was a discussion at a special meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council, I believe on Tuesday, about that issue. And that... perhaps Micah Posner knows about that because he's in the studio. Perhaps he doesn't. Did you hear about that special city council meeting on Tuesday, Micah?
A little bit, but I don't know much more than what you said in kind of vague terms. I know that the city, you know, has an intention to build that parking structure and move the farmer's market across the street to the lot near the church. But I don't know all the nitty-gritty details about it. No, I don't.
Well, I understand from reading that... that fine writer in the Santa Cruz Sentinel, Genevieve Bookwater, or Bookwalter, never quite get her name right, that they are having financial problems around that. And I'm kind of trying to look up the story even as I try to fence with the story, which, again, I don't know too much about either. But there were some people who spoke at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting, the special meeting, that opposed this, suggesting that the number of parking spaces required is actually going to drop, what with the rising price of gasoline. And I thought you might have a comment on that, since you're a man who's not known to own 3 or 4 vehicles.
No. Bikes. I own about 3 bikes. But, yeah, I mean, it's a really strange and exciting time to be an activist in transportation, especially in two-wheel transportation, because... it's becoming clear that people are going to drive less. I mean, for the first time in 30 years, the vehicle miles traveled went down in the state of California, even though the population went up. And I'm not talking about smoke, you know, which you could say was affected by the whole Prius craze and all that. I'm talking about actual vehicle miles traveled. So that's exciting, and it kind of... cast a different light on the whole automobile expansionist policies that the parking lot represents. And the woman who's sort of heading up stuff about the parking lot and trying to modify it or get rid of it is Debbie Bolger. You can contact her, Robert.
You want to give a number or an email out for folks who are interested?
I don't have it on me, so I guess I was partly talking to you so that you can do some more research and tell your listeners. Talk to me later.
I'll try to do that. And if anybody knows out there, please call in 427-3772 if you've been involved in this process and would like to involve the broader community in the debate as to whether to kick in $13 million more for another 4 or 5-story parking garage or maybe spend the money on something more useful. Give a call, 427-3772. In the studio with me is Micah Posner?
Posner.
Posner. I will pose you many questions and hopefully remember your name by doing so. You're handing me a little yellow flyer. Stand up for your right to ride safely. May 13th, Santa Cruz City Council meeting. Meet at 6 p.m. at the town clock to ride up Mission. I guess we'll have to alert the truckers to see if they can score a few more points.
No, that's way too crass.
Thanks, not.
No.
And you're going to ask council members to support the bike may use full lanes signs on Mission Street. Caltrans is ready to cooperate with the city. Now it's up to us to convince the council to request this sign. Cyclists all over the country are watching this struggle. If you can't make it, contact City Council at City Council. This is the email, citycouncil@ci.santa-cruz.ca.us, or call them at 420-5020. 420-5020 is the City Council number. You can do that, actually, while you're listening to this show and leave them a message. That's, of course, the next City Council meeting. It's coming up on Tuesday. I have you in the studio, finally. I've captured you.
Thanks for reaching out so much, Robert.
Oh, yeah. Well, I kind of hooked you in here. I see here a letter from Dan Dickmeyer. I don't know if you read it.
Yeah.
He says, Santa Cruz City Council does not have its hands tied regarding a Mission Street safe bike corridor, as News, the writer and the regular columnist of Metro Santa Cruz, writes. All it has to do is pass an ordinance exempting Mission Street from the rules that state no bicycles on sidewalks in commercial zones. Simple enough. A little paint, some signs about courteous behavior, and some public education. There is no reason why Mission Street sidewalks could not work with foot traffic just as West Cliff Drive does. I don't see that many people walking on Mission Street anyway. And since when are bicyclists not aware of the Santa Cruz motto, question authority? If the city doesn't declare the sidewalk a bike path, then just ride there anyway. What a scofflaw. Who's going to be out ticketing the bicyclists given the recent horror of two fatalities on the street? The city needs to stop passing the buck to Caltrans, which is never going to do anything. Dan Dickmeyer. What do you think of Mr. Dickmeyer's letter?
Well, it's interesting. Let me address part of it first, which isn't his main point, but the idea that Caltrans will never do anything. I have to say, I mean, I can't say I've had a really great positive view of Caltrans over the years, but I'm really happily astounded by their stance about this. I think it had to do with pressure they got from Assemblyman Laird, who's a People Power member. And they're ready to just do whatever we feel like as a community we want to do to make the street safer. I mean, I guess except get rid of a car lane, which would be the real way to fix it. But but they're definitely willing to bulldoze buildings if we want to, or what our short-term answer is to put up these signs that encourage cyclists and drivers to create a culture to share the lane. So they're still Caltrans. I'm not saying that for anything radical, but they have been really cooperating, and which News didn't realize when they printed the story that Dickmeyer refers to. At that point, people thought...
What was that story?
Well, the story said that the city might want to put up these signs, but they have no chance because Caltrans would never let them. So, but the surprise is that Caltrans is supporting these signs, and it's really up to the city. There's no reason why we can't get these signs put up.
Well, what was their objection before?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, Caltrans is usually this huge faceless bureaucracy. In this case, though, thanks again to Mr. Laird's office, as well as whatever, you know, some kind of thread of compassion or concern. Caltrans, you know, have their phone numbers, and we're working with them, and they're, you know, they're ready to help. So yeah, I don't know before, because you never got a straight answer from them before, but now we are.
So you've attempted in the past to get an answer from them, what, through personal communications and failed?
After the first death on Mission Street.
Last fall? Or?
Yeah, last August, September. It was Mr. Mislin, John Mislin. The city council wrote a letter to Caltrans saying that they wanted to put up these signs that say bicycles may use full lane. And the reason council did that is because it's not safe to ride to the right of cars on Mission. And so there's two options, which I'd like to get into as per Mr. Dickmeyer's letter. One is to ride on the sidewalk, and the other is to ride in the lane as a motor vehicle, which is what I've been doing for 20 years. So the city council...
Still in one piece, it seems.
Yeah, I have like 150,000 miles on my bike, and yeah, I'm still in one piece. So the city council, in addition to pursuing ways to get bikes off Mission, which I also support, such as a bike boulevard on King Street, the city council also saw the importance of putting up signs on Mission that say bikes may use full lane. Now, Caltrans sent them back a letter that was just all full of, you know, gobbledygook, and they said this. They said that I won't bother getting into the bureaucratic reasons why they said they couldn't do it, but
I was asking about those reasons, because suddenly they turned around and said they could. I'm just wondering what was the nature of the technical reversal. I mean,
are you sure? Okay, so
unless it takes an hour. I mean, yeah, give it a minute or two.
Okay, so there's all these acronyms that have to approve signs. MUTCD board. They don't really have to approve signs. I mean, Caltrans in the past has made it sound as if they don't really have any sway over these acronyms, and the acronyms are just going to tell them no, when in reality, the acronyms usually do what Caltrans says anyways. So they wrote back this letter saying, well, we can't put up those signs because this board and that board won't ever do it, and blah, blah. But as it turns out, if they ask for a one-year exception, the boards are happy to grant it, and, in fact, these boards are pretty close to granting the sign anyway. So the National Sign Board has been lobbied by bicyclists all across the country, sort of...
After the second death this spring.
Well, no, this was already happening, because this is a... I mean, we have one Mission Street around the country. There's, you know, millions of these kind of streets that have no room for bicyclists. So there's been kind of the national bike wonks, or bike intelligentsia, or whatever you want to put them. These people have been doing policy work.
The bike Gestapo.
Yeah, they've been doing policy work for 50 years and whatever. And so they've been trying to get these signs, and they're really close. So the National Sign Board is about to hopefully ratify the sign for use all across the country, which is partly why this is such an important moment, because if we get Caltrans put up in Santa Cruz, it helps cyclists all around the country get these signs up that keep them safe and make it clear that bicyclists have a right to the road.
So there was a...
So Caltrans said that the sign board would never do it, which wasn't true. And
this is a letter last fall, and the response to
the response,
city council.
Yeah, to city council, right. So, mm-hmm. So... You know, then another person got killed on Mission for the same thing. He was riding to the
April,
right.
Or was it March?
Yeah, it was in April, just about a month ago. Mm-hmm. He was riding to the right of a truck, and the same thing happened. And so then, I mean, John Laird's office was already trying to help us, but then they really cranked up the pressure. I got kind of obsessed and made more phone calls and contacted the National Bicyclist people, who I should have talked to originally, but I didn't think of it. And so... You know, a couple of things happened. One, they were under a lot more pressure. Oh, also, Mislin's family is suing them in the city. That probably helps. So they're just under a lot more pressure. And we got better information and presented it to them and said, look, we don't believe it. We know you can put up the signs. But, you know, I also like to think, because I've been communicating with them now, I think that the pressure was a way to get their attention. But once it got on their radar screen, the two people who've been... you know, deemed responsible for Mission Street. They've been really good, actually. I've heard them say some things at meetings and such where, you know, it shows that they do understand, they do think bikes should have use of the full lane, and you know, they're trying to do the right thing. So yes, it took a lot of crazy politicking and arm twisting to get them to the table, but I also want to just appreciate them for the way they've handled the matter since then.
Well, you are ever the diplomat there, Micah, and I know that you've been... When we discussed your coming on the air, you said, well, you know, there are going to be new developments happening, and you initially had some harsh words for city council, which apparently don't have to be so harsh because you've gotten some movement in some way that you think is effective.
Now, the city council actually has been between okay and great from the beginning. I mean, they wrote that letter, and then, you know, Mike Rockin was in the Metro last time saying that, you know, the hell Caltrans can't put up those signs. Of course they can. I mean, he didn't realize that we'd already sort of found that out while it was being printed. But no, the city council has, some of them have been great, and some of them have just tried to sort of keep things calm. We haven't had a ton of support, since Robert wants me to name names, we haven't had a ton of support from some of the city staff. I got to say, I haven't really been able to empathize or understand what makes sense from the police's response. When John Mislin died, they wrote a report saying that it was his fault because he was passing the truck on the right. So it would seem like they would be the biggest champions for these signs, but that hasn't been the case. The police chief has reservations about the signs, which to me don't make sense, because, I mean, as someone who cares about public safety, I would expect that he would either... You know, that he would help us decide where the safer place to ride on the road is.
Chief Scary.
Chief Scary, yeah. And, you know, it's scary, to use a pun, for cyclists.
Scary, when
the police don't come out and sort of help us find a way to be safer.
What was the reaction? What kind of a police report came out of the second death? What's the name of the most recent death?
Chris Rock.
What about Chris Rock? What was the SCPD report on that?
Well, the first one we have information from, but we haven't seen the whole report because it's in litigation. The second report we don't even have any information on yet. They haven't finished writing it. So
they're still writing the Chris Rock report. It's a month later. What do they have to do? Analyze the send the autopsy reports to Michigan, or what's the problem?
Well, I mean, maybe they have written it yet, but someone like Genevieve has to get her hands on it so they find out about it.
Sentinel.
Yeah, I mean, someone has to leak some part of it so that we learn about it. And so far, there's no information.
What about his family? I mean, can't they get a copy of that report?
Well, maybe Mislin's family helped Genevieve get a hold of it, but I'm not, you know, in contact with
the family. Does Rock have a family that's concerned about this and may file a similar lawsuit, since lawsuits seem to be effective?
I don't know. I mean, I hope so, but...
You didn't know him personally, or...?
Not really. I've met him a few times, but...
Any of his friends particularly concerned? I know you have been concerned about it, but has there been anybody who's been raising the cry on this one? Or?
Well, I mean, yeah, a lot of people really cared about Chris and were really upset that he was victim to a transportation system that doesn't have a place for bikes. The spokesman, he hung out the spokesman a lot, and they actually closed the shop for the last ride we did in memorial of Chris, and they all came on the ride. And so, you know, I mean... Have they gotten in and did the kind of political work I'm doing? No, that's not their thing, but they definitely care about Chris a lot and want the street to be a lot safer.
Mm. Well, Chris, I began this discussion by asking you about Dan Dickmeyer's proposal to do something City Council could do, which declare the sidewalks legal to ride on for those who want to ride on.
Right.
What do you think of that proposal?
I think it's a reasonable idea. I mean, we have a street that doesn't have a place for... You know, 6 years ago, just to review the history real quick before I get to that, 6 years ago, Caltrans and the city redesigned the street and designed bicyclists out of it, so which is why they deserve to be sued. So we have a street which cyclists are always going to use because it's a major commercial district, but it doesn't actually have a place for cyclists on it. So we either need to act as vehicles, as like cars, and be in the middle of the lane so we don't get squished, or, as Mr. Dickmeyer suggests, maybe some cyclists would rather act like pedestrians and ride very slowly, like we all should ride on Westcliff, and keep a 360-degree viewpoint and ride on the sidewalk. So, you know, which is certainly a better option, like if you're riding with your 8-year-old kid and you have to take Mission for a block, I don't think you should probably take your 8-year-old into the lane on Mission. So I think that's a reasonable suggestion, and we have, the city council is working on that, I should try to work on that as well. I've been focused more on the cyclist rights for the type of cyclists like me that act more like vehicles, but I think it's a good idea, and I would like to act on it. We'll keep trying to propose that. We did mention that to City Council, but...
Are there others who are helping you in this campaign in terms of doing the what you term political work? I would call it activist work, whatever it is. So that you're not simply shouldering this burden all by yourself?
Absolutely. It's been a great coalition. I mean, I mentioned Assemblymember Laird's office. They've been amazing at sort of, you know, getting everyone to the table and making sure that activists and bicyclists were at these meetings, because the type of meetings we're having, usually they don't invite anyone except for, you know, the police chief and Caltrans or whatever. But it's been a relatively open process. And
But you said that you have to be invited to the meetings. Does that mean they're not open to the public?
Or? No, they're not open to the public because...
So it's not an open
process. It's not an open process, mm-hmm. But it's a more open process because there's members that aren't wearing the sort of bureaucratic hats that usually go to them.
It's open to the friends of the legislators, or those who feel that if you have legislators who are... The legislators want to open the process, they could open it to the public, but they don't. They're inviting their friends in.
Well, I disagree. I think they're inviting people. They want to have a controlled group, and so they're inviting people in which they feel represent concerned parties.
Why
which
would you
includes
need a controlled group? I don't understand.
Because a lot of these issues aren't necessarily ostensibly political. So there's a lot of things that we can all agree on. Like, for example, you know, at a meeting with these folks, we agreed that we should try to get money to put up route signs outside of Mission, encourage people how to ride away from Mission. So that doesn't really, there's nothing involving power around that, and I don't think that
Why
needs
should
to
those
go.
Be closed to the public?
Well, because it's easier to make, to negotiate things that aren't political or that don't leave out anyone at those meetings. But what's happened,
Wait
Robert...
Why, hold it. Why would it be easier? I'm
because it's 12 people instead of 60 or 80 or 100 or whatever.
Well, you don't have to negotiate with the entire community, but if it's open and transparent, everybody can watch. That's the point.
Well, that's
the
point.
City council meeting is, you know, is not open. They shut you down real fast if you try to talk for more than 2 minutes, but at least they can't shut down the council meetings, whereas your meetings are closed to all but the favored few.
Well, that's a good point, that maybe those meetings should be, televised or something. But I think what's happened is that the most political part of it, the only part that has serious disagreement right now from all these different staff members who really do, you know, want to keep people safe but also have other agendas, is the use of the full lane. And so I've been instrumental with council members' help in bringing that to a public process, to the city council meeting. And And I know I'm committed to, if there's other things, and I'm talking to people like you and everyone else, if there's other things that that need the light of public process, that I'm going to make sure that they get it.
So this thing coming up on the 13th is not a proposal to open up the sidewalks to use by bicyclists along Mission, as Dick Meyer suggests, but is simply a proposal that the city post signs, more visible signs that allow it to be socially acceptable for people to take the full right lane.
Yes,
who are
because
on bicycles.
At the moment, you know, when I take the full lane on Mission, I get intimidated, or people attempt to intimidate me. They flick me off, they honk at me, all that. And I imagine that John Mislin and Chris Rock, who are both experienced cyclists, knew it was safer in the lane, but it's hard to have that kind of confrontational energy all the time with drivers who don't like it. And so these signs would help create a different culture where we do what's more objective. I mean, there's objective safety and subjective safety. You know, subjectively, it's scary to ride in the lane on Mission because people are trying to intimidate you, but objectively, it's a lot safer than riding to the right. So these signs would help create a safer place on the lane on Mission.
Now, do you know, has this actually been done anywhere else with success? There have been accidents or manslaughter incidents, you know, in other cities where bicyclists have been, you know, smashed off the road, and then signs have been put up and there have been positive results? Or is this just a theoretical deal that you're working on, a theoretical hope that these signs will have an impact?
Yeah, there's actually signs on East Cliff as you come into town from Live Oak, which are similar. There's a graphic that shows a bicycle taking the lane in front of a car. There's a sign on Bay, like 50 yards from Mission. San Francisco has a lot of these signs. They're up along the length of Columbus, which is a very busy street in San Francisco. So yeah, there's a lot of these signs, and there's sort of a, as you know, the price of gas goes up and cycling becomes more palatable to the mainstream, there's definitely an understanding that every public street needs to have a place for cyclists. I mean, you know, Kings, we hope there's always going to be more pleasant streets than Mission to ride, and I would encourage people to avoid Mission, you know, as a through route, but every public street in this country needs to have a way to be used by a bicycle.
Again, you didn't answer the question, though.
Sorry.
Has there been a reduction in fatalities in any places where the signs were put up?
I don't know the answer to that question. I know that the signs have been positively reviewed by the municipalities, including San Francisco, that have put them up. So I would assume that the answer to that is yes. I also know that accidents, it's far more likely on busy streets like this to get hit when you're riding to the right of a vehicle than when you're riding in the middle of the lane. And that's supported by data about bicycle accidents across the country. The most likely way to get hit on a bicycle, which is how John Mislin was hit, is with a vehicle not seeing you and turning right into you. They call it the right hook. Whereas accidents from behind, especially for people that have lights at night, are very rare. So the data does support that it's safer to ride in the middle of the lane. As far as specific data about changes after the signs are in, I don't know. That's a good question.
Now, if you go to the Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel, as they call themselves, online, there's a little video deal, Bike Safety on Mission Street. You've probably seen it.
If it's a really derogatory one full of hate-mongering, I try not to read those.
Indeed. Well, now, this is radio.
I try to avoid
those
mostly.
It's hate-mongering time on free radio. We want you to deal with the merchants of hate, though I too avoid. They have one particular website that now has 120 responses, you know, why Robert Norris and Becky Johnson have hurt the homeless movement. And I can tell you that there are many claims.
Don't read those, Robert.
Well, I've read all of them, and I'm taking it all to heart. But unfortunately, there's not much substance, so it's hard to respond. But
well,
for anybody who wants to call in on any of these topics, there's a radio show twice a week. You're welcome to call in and actually discuss them. You can even say, you dirty, lousy, crappy, fucky, whatever you'd like to say. Just get it all out there. That's what we're trying to do here. Though, actually, it's nice to get some substantive arguments. Here's the Sentinel video on Mission Street. I'm going to play a little of it, and you can give me your reaction. You can't see it, but I think you'll be able to hear it. At least I hope.
Causing the most hardship in Cuba, specifically.
Whoops, that's the wrong one. Hang on, don't go away. I've got to find the appropriate thingy, and I think we'll be okay. I'm going to force you to face the music here,
yeah.
Let's see here. Because, you know, we want to, there are people who just think you're just a dirty, crazy commie, and who knows what else. Here we go. Let's see if we've got this
idea. That's just going to make more bikes on Mission, so more people are going to get hit. I think they either need to redesign the road and put in bike lanes, like just one way each direction, center turn lane, big bike lanes, parking spots, that would work, or just put up signs that say no biking on Mission. And if they see you biking on Mission, you get a fine. There's roads going up and down both sides, a block away. There's no reason to ride on Mission. But bikes in the road, I mean, come on.
Pausing. Any comment on that?
Well, I think as a, you know, as someone who hasn't thought about this or been involved with this for years, I mean, the first thing you said made a lot of sense. I mean, that's exactly what they should do on Mission. They should take out a car lane, put in bike lanes, and put in a center turn lane. And the street would actually work better as a commercial district because of the amount of turns that happen on Mission. It makes it harder for people to visit the businesses, and it actually interrupts the flow and just generally makes the street more dangerous. And that's what People Power proposed six
You're
years
suggesting
ago.
Suggesting a sort of a centered turn lane, and then one lane each on each side,
and then bike lanes. Yeah, we call it a road diet.
Sort of like what happens on Soquel, right?
Exactly, right. And we call it a road diet, and that's exactly what the city and Caltrans should have done on Mission. And the city had some, you know, desire to do that. I don't know exactly how much. And Caltrans said absolutely not at the time. They want to throw more money at this to run more cars. So he's right.
Could that be done now?
Absolutely, sure. It's just
how much
paint.
Would it cost?
It won't cost anything. It's the road width that's already there. It's just repainting it.
Why not get the Rutkin and all his pals on city council to demand this of Caltrans instead of putting up nice new signs, which, while in theory, you know, helpful, you've got no stats that show they reduce fatalities.
Mm-hmm. Well, I do have some stats that shows that this type of riding the road reduces
you
fatalities.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, not specifically to the signs, but to the type of riding style. But it's a good question. I mean, and I appreciate, you know, his outside view, and you're pushing that on me, because sometimes, you know, when people like me work with this all the time, we get too involved in, like, well, what's possible today? I mean, I and other people should be saying that, you know, in a sense, he's correct. That is what should happen. You know, I mean, I think the signs would really help, and they're a great statement of respect for bicyclists, and I think it's likely we can get them on Tuesday. But in terms of what really should be done, yeah, damn right. We should repaint that street and put bike lanes on it.
Well, why not do it? I'm asking you. You have, you know, apparently you have the ear of at least one guy on city council. As Rotkin said to you, nah, never happened, next, and that's why you've stopped from any discussion of it? Or?
Well, to a certain extent, yes, but you know, if someone like that on city council says that, it's because they and I both understand that Caltrans would fight that tooth and nail for a million years. I mean, the reason
why would they?
Because Caltrans is in the business of moving, of quantitatively moving people around California, especially like interstate commerce and trucks and whatnot. So Caltrans spent a ton of money to widen the street because they want to move more stuff around California. So for them to then you know, get rid of a car lane and slow traffic down and reduce the quantity of automobile traffic on the street is an anathema to why they spent money on the street to begin with. I don't agree with that. You know, I think that was a misuse of funds. It's a misuse of basic public policy about transportation. And you know, if
when did
I
that
had,
happen, by the way?
About 6 years ago, 8 to 6 years ago.
You were
ago.
Here when that happened?
I was.
Were you involved in the struggle?
I wasn't very much. And I was
Who
having,
would know about it?
Ron Goodman was the director of People Power at the time.
Uh-huh.
He's been quoted in the Metro. And I give you his number afterwards. Maybe he wants to be on the show. But
because I'm wondering how much of it was a Caltrans decision and how much of it was a decision that could be influenced by city council activity or Laird activity, if you will. Laird's our assembly person, for those who don't know, or some people's assembly person who happen to be in this district and who he
right.
happens to let into his private meetings. And I'm glad that in some cases that has some positive effects, though I don't know if signs, frankly, is much of an improvement. I mean, I'm not a bicyclist, so I can't really say, but...
Well, let me explain.
I want to hear that. But what I'm trying to say here is, this issue came up 6 years ago, and it was a substantive question: who made the real decisions here, and how much? Because if Caltrans can turn around on the signs after stonewalling and not responding, why couldn't it easily also turn around on this other issue if properly presented? Particularly since you have two fatalities
right.
within a year there.
Right. Well, that's a good point, and you know, maybe. Maybe I should be, I mean, I have pushed for that and gotten totally stonewalled, but maybe we should keep pushing for that. You know,
who stonewalled you?
The director of Caltrans, Rich.
But then he stonewalled you before on the science.
That's true. Good point, Rob. Good point, Robert.
Letter bombs, perhaps?
No letter bombs.
No letter bombs. Okay.
So.
Go ahead, you were saying.
Oh, so I was talking about the signs. The signs are a big deal, actually, because... So here's a metaphor I'd like to use. I taught mountaineering for many years, and if you walk on a little 12-inch wide ledge 3,000 feet up a mountain, it's a pretty safe thing to do. But if you are up at the top of a mountain when a lightning storm strikes, you could get killed. So it feels dangerous to walk on a little ledge, but it's not really. It's called subjective hazard. But if you're up on a mountain in a lightning storm, it may not feel dangerous, but it is. You could easily get killed. And I think that even though most people don't understand this, that it is fairly safe to ride in the middle of the lane on a busy street like Mission or Soquel or Seabright or whatever, as long as... But it's hard right now because people try to intimidate you. If we could create another culture on Mission and other streets around the country where there's no bike facilities, then we could share the road safely and use it safely.
Is there any... It's hard to say evidence because it seems so intangible and subjective. But I don't know what kind of evidence you could amass. But I guess you could look at bike fatalities in different cities, right, differently organized. Have you come up with any kinds of comparative studies in different cities? And also, what do they do in Europe where biking, right, is more prevalent, as I understand it?
Right. Those are good questions. As I mentioned, there are studies about safety and fatalities around biking, and they show conclusively that biking in the lane is a relatively safe thing to do. There's very, very few accidents or
fatalities.
Typical
study would be to, our skeptical listeners should go look at what website or what should they Google for it? Any?
Yeah, that's a tough one.
Bike fatalities, riding in the
I guess they should just contact me and I can put them in touch with. I've had the honor of some of these national bicycle planners have been feeding me these statistics and reviewing these for me. And so I have looked at them, but I don't have my finger on those studies. But I can put listeners in touch with them and get them in touch with those studies if they contact me at PeoplePower, 425-0665, or peoplepowersc.org. There's one book I guess I could refer to people. It's kind of the Bible of bicycle safety. It's called Effective Cycling by John Forrester, and he cites. I could recommend that, Effective Cycling, and I think they have a website too, John Forrester's website, Effective Cycling. So, but it makes sense if you think about it, because most drivers, well, almost no drivers are murderers. I mean, these truck drivers killed cyclists because they didn't see them, you know. And if you're riding in the front of that truck, it's going to see you. And if you're riding to the right of the truck, it may or may not see you. So it's kind of common sense when you think about it. Like the safest way to be in traffic is to be seen. That's what it comes down to.
You know, it's interestingly true in terms of other civil rights, not just in terms of safety, but, you know, there are those who claim, well, if only those darkies had been a little more cooperative.
Exactly.
A little more quiet and, right, and less uppity, then they, right, they would not have been given so much problem. But, right, in fact, of course, you had to be more uppity in order to be seen as, right, a human being and to be treated as one. And maybe the same is true for bicyclists.
Right. I think that gets to the heart of the issue, and that gets to why, you know, some people are irate. You know, some people more concerned with the status quo are irate because, yeah, that's exactly it, Robert. I mean, if we assert our rights and we're seen in the largest sense, that we'll be safer. I mean, it's kind of like saying that bicyclists should be banned from Mission, which to be fair to the guy in the video, wasn't really his point
of
view.
One of the options he proposed.
Yeah, so saying that bikes should be banned from Mission is like saying that women shouldn't go out at night because they're getting assaulted.
I mean, they're wearing the wrong kind of clothing. You know?
Or they're wearing the right or whatever. I mean, you know, the most offensive part about it is that it's blaming the victim. And the dumbest part about it is it's completely not pragmatic. I mean, cyclists are always going to be on Mission. You can't ban bikes from Mission. It's against state law. Caltrans would never do it. And even if you tried to, bikes would always be on Mission. And so that's the dumbest part, is that by saying you should ban bikes, you're kind of taking yourself out of the discussion on how to make biking and driving safer. And the most insulting part is this basic, you know, disregard for civil rights and really blaming the victim. I mean, we're all really upset that people got killed on Mission, and drivers are, because they really care about not killing people. But for a driver to take that feeling of of fear and anger and say, ban those bikes off Mission is a classic case of blaming the victim.
Let's hear a little more from the Sentinel video. You got a minute or two? How are you doing for time?
Sure.
Let's see what we got here.
They should just have a bike lane and, like, keep to the bike lane. I think that would be make it more organized and, like, have less traffic.
I think it's a pretty important thing, especially due to the fact that there's so many cyclists in the town. It should be a very biker-friendly town, at least. I mean, as far as Mission goes, it seems like there's little you can do because it's such a narrow street, and it also is the Highway 1 just going through town. So, I mean, putting up signs is, I suppose, would help. I hope it helped. I mean, it is a difficult street to deal with, though.
In my opinion, it's a dangerous road for cars and bicycles. So I think they ought to reroute the bicycles in some way, or there'll just be probably another fatality or something.
Well, there's several. One would be possibly closing one side of the sidewalk for bikes so they stay off of Mission because it's dangerous, and leaving the other side open for pedestrians. The other would be, I'd hate to see, you know, no bikes allowed on Mission Street, because that's the only way, you know, that you have transportation. I don't know, do people pay attention to signs that much, you know? Maybe they ought to look for, you know, they always talked about putting the opening and bypassing Mission and putting the freeway going in. That would keep the large trucks off, because that's probably where most of the accidents are from, are the big trucks on Mission and the rigs. I don't know if there is a solution, to tell you the truth.
Go ahead.
I'm really glad to see this. Thanks for showing it to me, Robert. I mean, I think everyone was really, you know, pretty reasonable. I mean, the idea about rerouting bicycles from Mission, for the most part, we support that. I mean, we do want to create better routes than Mission for cyclists. We're working hard on King and on the rail trail. The city has hired a trusted bicyclist consultant to look at redesigning King Street. I mean, when I struggle hard for our right to ride Mission, it's not a contradiction to say that we should try to avoid Mission, you know, because we do have a ride and we do need to ride Mission, but usually only for a block or two. I mean, for the most part, cyclists can find a way to stay off Mission, and that's better for everyone, so we should do it. So, and then, you know, and it's true, it is a difficult road, and that's what we're stuck with right now. And other than doing a road diet, which is really the ultimate fix, you know, that's, we're left with some signs.
Well, it's not quite clear to me why there hasn't been a call for a road diet. I mean, I, conspiracy-minded dog that I am, find myself thinking that, and if you look at the comments, by the way, if people want to see or and hear this video, it's on the Sentinel, Santa Cruz Sentinel website. Just go to the Santa Cruz Sentinel and you'll find the video there. Underneath it are some comments that are a little harsher. I'm going to read some of those comments in a moment.
Yeah, that's more what I was expecting.
right, and you'll hear some of those. But, I mean, it seems to me that the dialogue, and the comments generally say, why don't these fuckers get off a Mission, these crazy bicyclists, it's their fault, and so forth. That kind of, pumping up that kind of dialogue seems to me, or even talking about signs on Mission, seems to be a diversion from the real solution, which is to change the way the street is organized. And it seems to me that you and others are being diverted from a meaningful solution to a symbolic solution almost. And particularly since, I mean, you've said, well, there's some indication of improvement in fatalities, but I sense you don't have any stats about this in any other cities. Maybe you do, and you haven't told me about them, but I don't see them. And I mean, you haven't, and you don't have any, right, at the moment.
Well, I have stats that show that it's a perfectly safe thing to do to ride in the middle of the lane, and we have direct experience that shows it's not a safe thing to do to ride to the
right. But you have signs that show once signs were put up, fatalities dropped on any of the streets where the signs were put up, re-bicycle fatalities.
Well, the signs aren't really about the safety factor. We could all go ride, and I already do, as I told you. I could ride down the middle of Mission right now and be perfectly safe. What the signs are for is to reduce the social intimidation,
I know,
which keeps cyclists from riding the street. So it's not the signs that keep people safer. What keeps people safer is riding in the middle of the lane.
Well, that's the question, though. Have signs elsewhere produced this, you know, counter counterpoint to the social intimidation factor, which I'm assuming you're correct. Has that, I mean, have you got stats that show a drop in bicycle fatalities on streets where signs were put up? Even though I know it's not the signs, it's the social intimidation alteration.
I don't. I could contact the San Francisco Bicycle Coalition, my guess is.
Right, that doesn't mean you're wrong. But what I'm saying is it seems to me that because there's no hard evidence, to put a lot of energy into putting up signs is to me,
I disagree there's no hard evidence because there's hard evidence that it's safer to ride in the lane, and there's clear evidence. I do have tons of evidence, both personal and in our community, that says that the reason people don't ride in the lanes is because they get intimidated. So if Chris Rock or John Mislin wouldn't have been intimidated into riding to the right, they'd still be alive. So that's the, I mean, I think there's enough stats behind how safety works to show that the signs would keep people alive.
Well, again, you're speculating, though. You don't have any evidence. Evidence would be, before the signs went up, you had so many fatalities. Right. After the signs, 2 years later, you know, and they might say, well, that's because they're not intimidated. Well, for whatever reason, the signs have that positive effect. Right. You don't have that evidence.
Well, that's true, and that's why this is a cutting-edge struggle. That's why cyclists all across the country want us to put up these signs.
But you would clearly have evidence. I mean, you don't need evidence to show that if you had a bike lane on both sides and a reasonable turning lane, things would be significantly better, at least in terms of this problem, right? There's no question about that, right?
Well, I completely agree. It's a much better solution. I also feel like there's no question that if there was a culture of cyclists riding in the middle lane on Mission, that these two people would still be alive. So either way would work.
Why not push for the way that would work for sure?
Well, I think both ways would work for sure to present these two particular deaths. But if your question is why not push for the better solution, because the road diet is definitely a better solution.
Right.
It's much more friendly. It doesn't impede, you know,
makes drivers. More sense. People would understand it. They would back it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And the reason not to push for that is because, I mean, we should push
John
for
Laird
that.
Says it won't work. Mike Rodkin says he doesn't think it's going to happen. I mean, those things don't mean shit to me. The question is whether the community is going to mobilize around the issue. Then they'll make it happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hope.
Cool.
Or there'll be a lot of outrage if they don't. But if you spend your energy, we've got a solution. We have signs up. You know, I mean, it makes people, first of all, I think it detracts from your credibility. And secondly, I think it detracts from the energy that could be mobilized around this. Of course, you know, here I am Monday morning quarterbacking you or Thursday evening quarterbacking you in this case. But there are people who say things like this. Bicycles should only be allowed to cross Mission Street, not ride along it. This is a comment underneath the video. Mission Street is the worst option possible for any bicyclist. Many of the accidents seem to be students that are unaware of the fact that King Street and California run parallel and are much safer. Mission Street is Highway 1. Unless you have a political agenda like most of Santa Cruz does, it would obviously be the dumbest way to cross that area when so many other safer options exist. Well, Your response to that is?
Well, I mean, he said to cross the area, meaning the west side of Santa Cruz, that we should try to, that smarter cyclists will stay off Mission. He's right. I mean, I don't know why he has such an obnoxious tone. I guess he probably feels guilty about possibly killing cyclists. But other than the tone, sure. But he's missing the point that Mission isn't just a through route. Mission is a commercial district that needs to be used by all modalities, including cyclists. So we're not suggesting that. And in a way, maybe that's an answer to your question about the road diet, Robert, is that if we get the use of Mission, you know, which we only need for a block or two at a time in the full lane, and then we get some really excellent streets as through routes like King and the Rail Corridor and everything, then maybe we do have a pretty sort of full spectrum solution. Because, you know, there is no need or reason for cyclists to ride Mission for 2 miles, but there is a need and a civil right to use it for a block or two to get to where we're going.
Another comment, I don't know why people on bikes insist on riding on Mission Street. As was said in the video, there are streets running parallel to Mission on either side of the street. If you're trying to get to a business on Mission, ride along one of the parallel corridors until you get to a cross street, which allows you access to your destination without spending unnecessary time on a road that has proven time and again to be fatal to bicyclists. What's more important, your right to bike on a highway or your life?
Well, again, this is an ignorant comment because, you know, I mean, the most obvious answer is, what about the businesses in between blocks? You know, like what is he suggesting, how people get to a bike shop or a restaurant?
Walk your bike. Crossbows?
Okay, well, it'd be good if people like this, you're honest enough to put that in his mouth, but he doesn't have the balls to say that outright because it's insulting. It's really insulting to tell someone who's using a bicycle for transportation, who's behaving more like a vehicle like I do when I ride, that suddenly we're supposed to get to Mission, turn into pedestrians and walk our bikes. It's a, it's really insulting. It treats us like second-class citizens, and it's just not okay. So that's where it becomes into a bicycle rights thing. Like, we shouldn't be told to walk our bikes for half a block or 2 blocks or 3 blocks or you know, whatever. We're road users, and we have a right to the road. And Caltrans is sticking up for that right. They don't agree with what this guy's saying. They think that we have a right to the road.
What do bicyclists, the bicycle community, think? Is there a division in that community, too, on this issue, or are people pretty much in consonance with your position?
Well, no one in leadership, and there's very few bicyclists in the bike community that disagree with the idea that we should have the signs and that we should use the full lane. There's a lot of people that feel more strongly about other things. Some people feel like it's more important to get rides to the sidewalk. Some people feel like we should push harder for the road diet. You know, I mean, there's definitely different bicyclists has different ideas about what's most important to solve this problem, and but there's very little disagreement about any of the solutions that have come from the bike movement. I think we all support each other, and we all think they're good ideas, and different people are working on different things.
Just another a couple of comments. Build a freeway overpass bypassed by allowing Mission Street to become just a street and not both highway and street. It can run from the River Street Junction with an exit at UC, the Eastern Access, again halfway down Mission, then merge around Swift and Western onto Davenport. That's, of course, the Eastern Access proposal, mm-hmm. which has been repeatedly denounced by environmentalists and others. Your view on that?
Well, I mean, it's really sad. I mean, it gets to the whole problem with automobiles in our society is that there's no place for them. They're dangerous. And so there's this sort of pie-in-the-sky idea that we'll just run them over everything on these freeway systems, and it doesn't work. I mean, you know, go to L.A. and look at what's happened. I mean, eventually you create a society where you never get anywhere because you're so busy trying to isolate automobiles, there's no place to go anymore. I mean, it's you know, from a bicycle safety standpoint, sure, but from a societal standpoint, it's absurd, and it's already not working.
Here's a guy who says, put up signs to encourage bikers to use alternate routes. They just widened Mission Street because of the traffic problems. This is going to make a mess of the traffic with a biker traveling 10 to 20 miles per hour. Cars will be fighting to get around them and will cause more frustration and accidents.
Well, we do support putting up signs for alternative routes, as I mentioned. And if cars or if drivers are frustrated, you know, I would expect them to care more about keeping us alive than about whether they get to Laurel Street 1.5 seconds faster. I mean, one thing that happened during this is I rented a truck to haul 2 tons of concrete to the dump, and I drove down Mission. And
you drove a vehicle?
Yeah, I drove a truck.
Typical. Hypocrite.
I don't think so. But anyways, it was a good experience because, you know, there was a cyclist riding to the right of me most of the time, and I felt nervous about it because they were in my blind spot at times, you know, and I wanted to see what was going on with them, and I would have much rather had them in front of me. And the other thing that happened is that, you know, until I drove the whole length of Mission, and until the end, the cyclist, who wasn't particularly fast, was just leapfrogging me. I mean, it's not faster. You know, driving a car down Mission is not particularly faster than riding a bike. You know, I mean, it's the whole idea that, you know, that cars have a divine right to not have bikes in front of them is absurd. It has nothing to do with safety. It has nothing to do with speed. It has nothing to do with efficiency. It's just kind of this sort of American mythos that people get from car commercials.
I got my big car, baby, and don't fuck with me.
Right, and people are watching too many commercials of cars driving over the ice caps for fun. I mean, you're not going to, you know, we're asking cars to wait behind a bike while they drive down Mission, hopefully only for a few blocks, because hopefully the cyclists are going to get right off Mission. And, you know, at the worst, it'll take you three seconds longer. I mean, it's really not very much to ask.
Carrie writes, I drive Mission every day on my way to work and see how frustrated drivers get when a car makes a left turn and slows their progress. They dart out into the right lane to get around the turning car. This would be the same if we needed to watch for cyclists. It would slow the already slow traffic. Bicyclists on a main thoroughfare when safer alternatives, when they're, she's a little elliptical in what she's saying. I'm not quite sure if I understand
that's
the
typical
point. James, it's bad enough going around bikes on Mission Street. Don't they know it is a busy and dangerous road to ride on? Now we're going to have to give up a whole lane on the highway to bikers? Now hold on. Santa Cruz is more PC than ever. It sucks that people have died on Mission Street. My common sense tells me not to ride my bike there, though.
Well, hopefully we're mostly avoiding Mission, but what does he do when he goes to a bike shop? Or what do people do who live on Mission and ride bikes? I mean, and also I think we need to look out for people that aren't as clued into cycling as this guy is. I mean, there's thousands of bike tourists that ride down the coast of California. Some of them don't speak English and have, you know, statewide maps, and they're going to be on Mission. So, you know, one thing that's frustrating for me about this conversation, not with you, but in general, the community conversation, is that people seem to keep making the point that we should try to avoid Mission, which I agree with. But we also need to deal with the fact that there's going to be bikes on Mission, and how do we keep them safe?
And here's a longer commentary, which keeps jumping up and down on the screen here. Come on, baby. Hang on.
This will teach you to read the Sentinel.
This will teach me to... This is by Jester Wrote. Well, here's an actual caller.
Yeah, how about an actual caller?
Well, I don't know. I don't know, another voice here. All right, we'll see what's up. Well, you were on free radio, but you went away.
Maybe they'll call back.
Come on, caller. Call back. We can do it. Jester Wrote user writes, and again, this is on, I'm reading comments from the Sentinel website. In the studio with me is Micah Posner, who is not a poser, but a posner, and he's actually affiliated with People Power. He'll be at the Santa Cruz City Council meeting on May 13th, encouraging City Council to... put up some bikes may use full lane signs. Is this a done deal? Another one of the Rutkins done deal behind the scenes things that we don't have to worry about? Because frankly, I want to waste my time on it if it is. What's the story on this? Is there any opposition to this proposal?
Yeah, there's opposition from some city staff, including the chief of police. They don't like the idea of bicycles using the full lane. And that's a huge problem because, you know, we're going to city council because they lead the city and we're asking them to sort of ratify our rights.
Well, you don't want them to run against what the police department says. Look what happened to Tony Madrigal. He get run over, man.
I'm not getting run over. I ride a Mission all the time.
Mm-hmm. I'm talking about by the, yes. The police department is run over Tony Madrigal. Right. But he's fighting back. He has his own racism forum coming up on May 14th, actually, which we'll be talking about later in the show.
Yeah, and Tony's definitely in support of these signs. So I don't, you know, it's not a matter of running over the police because we need to care about what they think and get
it's
their
more a matter
help
of them running over you, I would say. Yeah.
I don't think it's that much of an issue. It's a matter of the city council, you know, set policy for the city, and I think they understand this issue and care about it, but we need to go and stiffen their resolve to do what's right. And
you've spoken with Howard Scarry yourself, and he's not been able to change his opinion on this.
Yeah.
What are his arguments? Why does he not favor these signs? Is it because of the kind of arguments we're hearing on the Internet, that it would be unsafe anyway and it's going to produce more fatalities in spite of the signs? Is that his claim?
No, I think no one who deals with traffic safety, including Caltrans or the police, have said that because everyone recognizes that these signs would have prevented these fatalities and created a safer road. What I've heard from the police or other people that are dubious about the signs is that... they're worried that cyclists will take the lane everywhere where they shouldn't take the lane, which is, you know, I mean, I think that's pretty adequately taken care of by the word may. I mean, the fact that we do have the right to take the lane, according to the California Vehicle Code, is something we need to use only, you know, when we need it. And Mission is, according to the California Vehicle Code, it fits perfectly with where we should take the lane. Whereas streets that have bike lanes, little neighborhood streets, you know, other streets, it's perfectly safe and more respectful to ride to the right.
Well, so what Howard is telling us, the chief of police is telling us, people will not properly understand these signs and start driving at 5 miles an hour down every street in Santa Cruz and thereby stopping traffic and causing shooting incidents. Bicyclists will be killed by frustrated motorists and things like that.
He seems to have that concern. I mean, maybe you should try to get him on the air because I have to say that one thing that's been frustrating for me about this process is that I feel like, as you pointed out, Robert, that we have a pretty small ask here. We're not really, you know, and maybe we should be demanding the best solution for the road, which
yes.
is the road diet. We're just asking to sort of ask the powers that be to ratify our right to use a street as per state law, and some people don't want it to happen. So that doesn't, I don't really get it. I mean, and that's why we're going to city council. We tried meeting with, you know, different staff members, and city council runs the city, and so... I invite everyone to come and tell the city to stand up for us and keep us a little safer.
How many meetings have you had with staff?
Well, they're like 2 or 3 meetings and different conversations.
How many hours would you say you've spent talking to them?
A lot. Dozens.
Dozens of hours. And yeah. The main point person on this is Scarry, or there's some other person who's the main point person?
Well, I don't think that's... I don't... I mean, I have said the chief of police's, you know, position, because it does mystify me and upset me, honestly. But there's no reason in getting into exactly who says what or whatever. I mean,
let me put it this way: who's responsible for issuing the staff report that will come up opposing your position? Right. I know you don't want to antagonize anybody, Mr. Right. Politician here, right. But the fact of the matter is, you need to know who you're confronting if you right. want to know what's going on. I think that people right. who are sympathetic with you need right. to know that, too.
Yeah, it's Chief Scary, backed up by City Manager Dick Wilson.
Dick Wilson, the city manager for life since 1984, that's
yes.
that man?
Yes.
The highest paid city official?
Yes.
And does he ride a bike?
No. And
for heaven's sake.
And unlike
I don't Chief, either, actually.
Unlike Chief Scary, who has some experience with thinking about traffic safety, City Manager Wilson, you know, what does he know about traffic safety? It's been hard that, you know, that he's been sort of part of the city staff move to derail these signs.
Have you found Wilson and Scary similarly unsympathetic to other bicyclists' concerns, or have they acted in a different way on other issues?
Well, I haven't dealt with City Manager Wilson before. I've dealt with the Assistant City Manager, Martine Bernal, who's been very helpful about some things.
But not this thing.
Well, he's the Assistant City Manager. He wasn't part of this process.
If you considered assassinating the city manager, maybe he would kind of move up and...
No, I'm...
Certainly not. Go ahead,
age,
I'm sorry.
Age might be a good solution.
Just kidding, all you Homeland Security people. Right, go ahead.
Yeah. So I think this is a healthy process. Like, you know, if we try to ask for things we need with city staff and it doesn't work out, we take it to city council. And
spending dozens of hours with, or a dozen or more hours, if you suggested, with Wilson and Scary and getting nowhere and then having to go to city council... how is that a healthy process?
It's a healthy process because city council runs the city, and by being involved with the political process with city council, we can ratify that, because unfortunately that's up for debate sometimes. I mean, you know, the city council does run the city, but not easily. I mean, these staff members, as you said, are here for life, and they have their own ideas and their own positions, and they're not elected, and we have no control.
And they have
over
more
them.
Than 2 minutes conversation speaking time at City Hall.
Exactly.
Which right. you won't. Actually, by the way, I remember, or anyone going to city council next week, ask the mayor for 4 minutes for people power before, as a group. They'll give you more time.
Oh, yeah, I got to remember to do that.
Remember to do that.
Right. So that's why, I mean... You know, you're sort of taking the conversation on a different term, but that's fine. But yeah, I mean, that's one reason to go to the city council meeting, is to bolster the confidence and the resolve of our elected officials. I think they do understand that these signs will make it safer, and we need to tell them, look, don't get run off track by city staff. You guys are elected officials. We support you. We need your help, and we want you to tell them what to do.
What arguments should we expect to hear from Dick Wilson, Howard Scary, and other staff members opposing this proposal? Because I assume that that's what we're going to hear at the council meeting.
Well, the good news is that because of conversations with Caltrans and others and city council members, they're not really opposing as much as obfuscating. They're saying that they prefer a different sign that says bikes, caution bikes in lane. So, and I'm not saying that's such a horrible sign. It might be somewhat useful, but the reason that it's being put forward is that there's some opposition to the basic concept that bikes could use the full lane. So, you know, I mean, in a way it's good news, because we're all on board for getting some kind of signage up that will help somewhat, but that doesn't really do it. I mean, bikes in lane, if you're a trucker from Modesto, you might think, oh, the bikes are to the right. You know, they're not on the sidewalk, and then you might run over one by accident. So we're standing firm on this idea that the sign needs to say bikes may use full lane.
So Scary and Wilson, if I understand this properly, don't mind spending dozens of hours of city time over one word on this sign, full lane?
Well, signs are allegories, which is why there's such an important struggle, and why I'm spending all this time on one word.
I'm saying, you're not getting paid to spend this time. We are paying them, and they are spending the time fighting this proposal. Essentially, it's the use of one word. I mean, admittedly, they say caution too, but this is
no. You're right. It's about
full
one word.
Lane is the yeah. issue. So they don't mind spending essentially hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars to fight this one word. I mean, do they have any other arguments about this
I don't want to try to portray them, because I don't.
Have you read their staff report? Because that's what's going to come out of their report.
Yeah, I have read the staff report.
Well, that's public. What are their arguments? Right. I haven't read it.
Well, they don't really present arguments. They just say they
prefer the police
signs.
Vote for us.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
That's a very cynical view. These people are trying to defend our public safety, Mike. We're talking with Michael Posner of People Power.
I'm not saying that they don't, because they don't like the sign I like, they don't care about public safety. I think they do care about public safety, but...
They don't have to bother to make any rational arguments about it.
Well, not. I mean, since I don't think they're rational, it's hard for me to portray them.
Well,
I mean,
you haven't
come to City Council, hear them make their arguments, and
no,
if you agree with them,
people listening to my radio show are not going to come to City Council.
They might email
into City Council. Yeah. They might call into City Council.
Okay, well, let's give the email again.
All right, but the reason, the point is, they have to have something to email in, and that's why I keep asking you questions that you find it. You're anxious about answering, which is to say, what are the arguments that they're going to have to confront? In essence, I'm suggesting to you that if they have substantive arguments, if Wilson and Scarry, police chief and our city manager, have substantive arguments, they have to be addressed.
Right.
If they have arguments that come simply from authority or come from obfuscation, they have to be mocked, satirized, and dismissed so strongly that they can't be presented under the color of authority. That's my approach to this thing. And you have to prepare for this. You can't just walk in and assume it's all going to happen unless you have the Rotkin-Dunn deal thing operating behind the closed doors, which you might. I don't know. That's how often things operate in our city, with the Dunn deal approach. Rotkin's the shadow mayor. He generally gets what he wants. There are exceptions to that. But, you know, so that's why I'm proposing to you, maybe perhaps on Sunday when I have a longer show, and when you'll know that people have read this staff report.
Why don't you pull it up? Oh, it's not public
yet.
It's
public, but it's not online. If I went to the library, I could get it, but I haven't got it with me.
I don't think it's public yet, actually.
It is.
Until tomorrow. Oh, okay.
No, it's public as of Thursday evening. I mean, in theory, it's only 72 hours, but in fact, it comes out on Thursday, 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. Well, I guess I have a...
You don't have to talk about it now, but I think I would encourage, if you really want people to address the issue substantively, you can't get to City Council or to know about it. And are we talking about a law change or a policy change? Because if it's a law change, it'll require two readings. If it's a policy change, it'll just require one.
Well, that's really what's at issue, is that some people, the police chief being the most notable among them, think that our right to use the full lane is vague. So he says that we don't have the right to use the full line at all points or all times on mission. Now, I feel like the vehicle code is entirely in disagreement with that. So, yeah, you can go to City Council, and I think, listening to your suggestion, Robert, I'll make copies of the vehicle code for people.
What about John Barrasoni, our erstwhile city attorney, who almost never opposes the police department? Well, he probably does in the cases I don't know about, but on every substantive issue I've ever seen, he's always been on the side of the police department.
Yeah, well, there's been some outrageous things that have come out of city staff. I mean, one thing we heard was that, you know, because the California Vehicle Code says that you should take the lane, if it's too narrow to share, to the side, right? So it's clear to me this lane is too narrow to side because two people have been killed trying to share the lane. So one opinion was that, well, it's too narrow with trucks but not with cars, which is... it's pretty outrageous. I mean, how the heck are you supposed to suddenly take the lane when there's a car coming behind you and then get back over when there's a car there? I mean, it's
when
impossible.
There's a truck behind you and then take it over when there's a car.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's a really impossible...
Well, it requires you get a little training as a bicyclist.
Yeah,
now,
right.
You could do that as people power. You could have pictures of trucks, cars, and then the uncertain issue of what's in the middle, truck cars.
Right, so that's... I think what we need to tell City Council is we don't want vagueness. The police chief and the staff have purposely put together a sign that's vague because they don't feel comfortable with the way that we interpret the law and the way we look at safety. So I think your question is, what should we demand at City Council? We should demand the clearest sign that will have the largest impact and produce the highest potential impact on safety.
Has there been much written communication back and forth between you, People Power, advocates, members of the public, and city manager and the police chief and other staffers who've been considering this issue?
No.
Okay. And that's the reason why it's important to hear about what's going on. I mean, I can take the, you know, I'll probably read the report. Although, again, to me, I find the issue, as I said, seems to me a secondary one, except that it shows, again, the overweening and often, I feel, illegitimate authority and influence that the police department and the city manager have on questions that are really a matter of community concern. And you've talked to a number of city council members about this, probably.
Yes.
Do you find any members, and you don't have to name any names, hostile to changing this at the moment? Or
no.
And how many people have you talked to? How many council members?
Five.
You're in violation of the Brown Act. You're under arrest. No, actually,
no, not,
members of the public
can't
talk.
I can talk to as many
yeah.
council members
right.
as I want.
Okay, yeah. Good. Just
so,
kidding.
So, yeah, no, I mean, I think the city council members are really, they really care about people getting killed on mission. I think a lot of them realize that riding in the bike lane would be safer. I know Mayor Coonerty mentioned that he was involved in an accident when he was younger, riding to the right of cars on Mission Street, which could have been avoided if he
I won't
been
make
in
comments
lane.
About how I might have preferred a more fatal accident, but
oh,
go ahead.
Oh, don't, please don't.
Certainly not.
So,
no.
Yeah, I mean, I think they understand this, and it's hard because, you know, they have other jobs and other things going on in their lives, and mostly they trust the city staff to give legitimate and careful
and
opinions.
And therein
about
lies
it.
The rub. Now, the question is,
the
have you actually gotten commitments from council members to vote for this?
I don't think that's really a no, because I don't. My relationship with council members isn't sort of a shadow government like you described. Council members pretty much never tell me that they're going to vote a certain way on a particular issue, because that's what happens at the city council meeting. So, which is another reason why everyone needs to go, because you can't trust Micah or anyone else to go round up votes on city council. The council needs to hear from the community and make a decision.
Well. I would like to say horse shit, but I don't want to say so before an esteemed guest here. It seems
Thanks.
To me most of the decisions are made about outside the council and before the council meets.
Well, they may make up their minds before the council meets, but they don't tell me what they're thinking, because, you know, that's their process. It's not mine.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Micah Posner, who's been very gracious with us. In fact, listeners, you've been very gracious. It's been an hour and 20 minutes talking about a bicycle issue from a man who hasn't been on a bicycle for 4 years and shows it, I might add.
Right. Well, this is a civil rights issue. This is an issue where people that use bicycles are being forced across the country into being second-class citizens. And these signs are very potent because they represent a step forward and an assertion that bicycles have a right to use every road in every part of this country in a way that's as safe as possible. So please come. We're meeting at the town clock at 6. We're going to ride Mission Street, and then we're going to go to city council and ask for these signs.
Well, I hope you don't linger in any parking lots, because, you know, that would be a violation of the Coonerty law. And since you want to show some respect for Neil, Ryan, who's going to be voting for your law, you don't want to violate his other ordinances, right?
I think you can respect people and completely disagree with them. And maybe we should do like a radio show in a parking lot. That'd be fun.
Very good. I mean, I'd be happy to do that.
Cool. Okay, I'm going to head out.
Thanks, Micah. And again, we've been talking with Micah Posner. If you want to get in touch with him, you can, of course, see him at city council. This is on the 7 o'clock session or the 3 o'clock session?
7 o'clock.
Hey, they actually have a 7 o'clock session. What a concept. And the issue is, will the staff recommendation caution bikes in lane be up, or will it may use full lane be the sign that comes up? And is there any other issue? Is that pretty much it?
That's it. We want our full rights to Mission Street.
And maybe somebody can even squeak up with the issue. How about some real safety matters like bike lanes and a change in the streets, which the city council could endorse, even if it couldn't empower, and might spearhead, such as the LBAM moth stuff.
That's a great suggestion. Let's ask for what we really want.
Uh-huh. Well, if you would do it, instead of simply saying so on the radio, that might be even better. We have a caller. Let's see if he wants to nail you to the wall before you leave.
All right.
Hi, you're on Free Radio with Micah and Robert. Hello?
Hi. Hello.
Turn down your radio.
It's down.
Good.
This is a bicyclist, but I didn't hear the plan for where the sign's supposed to go up.
Well, so tell me about that, Micah.
Whole street.
So there'd be 8 signs on Mission, 4 on each side.
Oh. Starting from where to where?
Starting from Chestnut and ending, I'm not sure, I think maybe around the Safeway. It gets wider around the Safeway. So, I mean, it's not up to me, it's up to Caltrans. But the idea is the signs would cover basically the length of Mission.
How about as part of the Mission? And then they might not have as much objection. Does that have anything to do with the reasoning?
Caltrans doesn't have objection. It's the police department that does. Are you suggesting
calling it? Yeah, whoever it is. Maybe if you don't have it the full length, like they do in Capitola, they just have it for part of Capitola Road.
That's a good question. Did you offer any compromises, or did the police and city manager suggest any compromise position other than their final proposal when you talked to them?
Well, it's been an ongoing process. I mean, they have come forward with a sign that I think would be somewhat helpful. I don't think it's clear, so I don't support it as much as the other sign. But I think more of the compromising has been around, you know, different language for signs.
Such as?
Such as caution bikes in lane.
Instead of, you know,
bikes may use fully.
Motorists will be shot who molest bicyclists or something,
right,
like,
something
that.
Like that.
Heavy penalties, triple fines for those who kill bicyclists.
Well, Assembly Lair did try to get Mission to be a double fine zone, and he didn't get it through the state Congress.
Another question, caller?
I just thought I would add an interesting what if.
So thanks. That's a good thinking.
Thank you, Mike.
Hey, and thank you, caller. Phone lines are open, 427-3772, but I think Micah's going to make a break for it unless you call right now, 427-3772. Micah, thank you for your patience. Aha, you see, some people are listening.
Are listening, wow.
All right, but will they come to City Council? That's going to be another big step.
Well, come on the ride anyways. If you're not up for meetings, come on the ride at 6 at the town clock.
Hey, free ride at 6, and caller, you're on the air with Micah and Robert.
Hey, Micah, my name is John. Thanks for coming on the show, and Robert, thanks for having him and presenting this issue.
Is the show too long, John? What do you think? Have we gone on for too long about this one or not?
No, perfect.
Go ahead.
Micah's question, I was wondering if you had any thoughts of coming up with T-shirts, maybe that displays the words that you're proposing on the signs, maybe bright yellow T-shirts, something fluorescent in nature to accompany your message.
Yeah, there'll be $10 at the ride before the meeting, $20 afterwards because we want people to wear them in the city council meeting. So, yeah, we're printing T-shirts that say bikes may use full lane on the back, and they say people power on the front. Thanks for the it's so cool that someone else is thinking that. Cause,
now, wait a minute. Is this a phony planted caller here? Did you paying this guy to call in?
No, and I don't know if you discussed this, and maybe I missed it earlier, but actually it was just a thought I had. I know that when you walk around town, you see Santa Cruz T-shirts everywhere,
mm-hmm.
and my thought is let's get these shirts and have everybody wear them, walking around town with them, and riding their bikes with them.
I think it's great. I ordered like 60, but I could order more if we sell out.
Yeah, okay. Well, put me down for one.
Thanks, John. Thanks for caring and wanting to put it on your back.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you, John. Phone lines are still open, 427-3772 for all you T-shirt fans, bicyclists, or supporters of the poor beleaguered Howard Scarry and Dick Wilson, who are getting a bad rap. Because this could be one of our city manager's friends. Hi there. We hope you're supporting City Manager Dick Wilson. You're on free radio.
Oh, hi there. Thanks a lot for both your service to the community through People Power and through your radio show. I wanted to ask on a broader level what you guys might have as far as commenting as far as the revocation of the vehicle license tax a few years ago, and if that it wouldn't be a good thing to hammer on, although I know you're not aspirations aren't to be widely political, but if you could comment on that.
What's your name, caller?
Oh, Mike.
Hey, Mike. Thank you. Thanks for the question. I, frankly, don't know diddly squat about that, but maybe Micah... Well, why don't you hang on while Micah gives you an answer? Do you have a question? Do you know what he's talking about?
Yeah, I know what he's talking about.
Yeah.
It's kind of similar to Robert's road diet conversation where, you know, there's always this question of how far do we venture into state politics? And for those of us who are pretty determined to act locally, it's a tough one, you know?
Clarify what he's talking about, because if I don't know,
well, yeah, he's,
other people
sorry,
Mike. Go ahead.
Part of the way that Schwarzenegger got elected was he came out against... So the state has been in debt for many, many years, and Governor Davis proposed raising the vehicle license tax, which would have been a great idea because it would have brought money to the state while simultaneously reducing driving. And Schwarzenegger came out opposed to that. That's partly how he got elected. Since then, Schwarzenegger's been playing this clamshell game with the state budget where, in order to fill that hole, he's sort of just temporarily siphoning monies from other programs. So I know about that. It's part of my job to keep up on that stuff, but I'm not. The California Bicycle Coalition works on that, and Congressman Laird, but I don't make it, you know, I try to focus more on things that we can get locally. But dang it, we sure do need people to work at the state level, and I'm glad that the caller understands the kind of outrageous, shame.
Shifting of resources.
Yeah, shifting of resources. There you go. Thanks. And I hope we can nationally stop people like Hillary Clinton from, you know, getting this sham where they repeal the gas tax because people don't understand how
suspend
money works.
Suspend it for a few months.
Suspend it for a few months, right. Mm-hmm. So, and I'm glad we have one national candidate that calls that a sham, so let's vote for him.
Anything else, Mike?
Thank you very much.
All right, man. Again, phone lines are open. Caller, it looks like we've got Micah glued to his seat here, 427-3772, or perhaps just about ready to go, actually, in case you want to hold him any further. Phone lines, 427-3772. And again, a reminder that on Tuesday at the City Council, there are two City Council meetings, 3 in the afternoon, 7 in the evening. The one he's going to be at, is it 7 in the evening? You want a T-shirt? May use full lane. Come at 6 o'clock to the town clock for the bargain. Brad, you bring your bike and ride along. Or do you need a bike, or can you just walk along? Can you run along?
You betcha.
Bet you can't drive along, though. That won't be...
Sure, you can drive along.
You can drive along.
In fact, we'd love it if you want to drive behind us and show your support by moving slowly and being polite.
Maybe we could have,
that'd be great.
All right. Well, I mean, yeah. It may be a bizarre-looking vehicle that day. Who knows?
It'd be full of bumper stickers, perfect.
Could be. Yeah. A sticker car may be there. And the email to email for the City Council to support this is citycouncil@ci.santa-cruz.ca.us. Or for those who have telephones, 420-5020. 420-5020. You can call right now and tell the entire City Council you may like and love Howard Scarry and Dick Wilson, but not on this issue, perhaps.
I want to say one more thing, as long as you've cornered me into speaking the details about specific political players, Dick Wilson and Howard Scarry, is that, you know, I'm totally hopeful that these folks will keep thinking about it and see how the community feels and listen to City Council and aside from the City Council process, just sort of change their minds on it. I mean, let's have resolve and go to City Council and use our political process, but, you know, let's also hold out hope that people do the right thing.
Yeah, okie doke. Well, one can always dream. You know, John McCain may have a vision, and Obama may decide not to, you know, increase the army by 100,000 as he's planning. We can always keep our fingers crossed, our eyes closed, and our thumbs up our asses.
Right, but we can take the streets at the same time and demand our rights.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
So again, if you want to get in touch with Micah, give him a call at PeoplePower 425-0665.
Yep, or check out our website, peoplepowersc.org.
Well,
all right, I'm off to dinner.
Hey, dine on, as they say.
Thanks for having me, Ryan.
All righty.
And I'll be on George's show on Tuesday at 3 o'clock, just to remind people to get your butts on your bikes and ride Mission with us and demand our rights.
Bike lanes, folks, it seems to be the way to go rather than little signs. But if you can't do that, go for the signs.
Well, let's go for all of it. I mean, it all makes sense, and we deserve all of it.
Okay, well, if you deserve all of it, you got to push for all of it.
It's like you're
pushing for part of it at this point.
Thanks, Robert.
Thank you, Micah. Always trying to get the last word in, and I apologize for that. Thank you, Micah, for coming in, and come in again. All right. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, call in number 427-3772. The last hour and a half, you've heard me talking with Micah Posner of the People Power Group in Santa Cruz, peoplepowersc.org. And to me, what seems to be a relatively trivial issue around signs on Mission Street, ask me why I spent an hour and a half on it, I'm not sure, except that it does illustrate some really significant points about activists in city politics. You can see how reluctant some activists are, whatever their intentions, their good intentions, to revealing the behind-the-scenes discussions that go on, how willing they are to engage in non-transparent discussions with people like Laird and to defend those non-transparent discussions. Although when they're called on it, and they acknowledge, well, it would be better if they were completely open, you know, and that would be nice. But people who work closely with politicians look for reasons to justify to some extent what the politicians do or don't want to too closely question them for fear they will lose leverage or antagonize those politicians. That's always a problem. And that's why it's good to have some people who are not closely tied to the politicians who are speaking their minds, though the heavens fall, as a judge said in a Scottsboro Boys case back in 1933. I was watching that movie by the same name, Heavens Fall, the other night. Well, let's listen to a little music again from my favorite group, or actually one of my favorite groups, actually a group I'm sometimes I like it. This is Then God Made Malls.
When we were small, pastures of meat. Little to do, little to wear, mornings for chores, evenings for prayer. When we were small, Father would say, plan for your future every new day. God gives us shelter, clothing and health. The devil will tempt you with women and wealth. Then came the light at the foot of the hill. It grew brighter and brighter and brighter and brighter. Men with machines building walls in the weeds. It grew higher and higher and higher and higher. Father was silent. He pulled up the blind and said, boys, mark my words, it's the end of mankind. Father died broken, a man of belief. Winter brought frostbite, famine and grief. But there was a light we always could see, to lead us back home, to set us so free. Then God made walls, and we were saved.
Shopping days, then came the light.
of meat. Little to do, little to wear, mornings for stores, evenings for prayer.
And that was another selection from Men and Women by Uncle Banzai, in the name of the song, Then God Made Malls. Well, 20 minutes left in the show, and I want to remind you, or perhaps tell you what I haven't told you before, that there's a meeting of the Planning Commission tonight. It started actually at 7, runs until 9, if I'm not mistaken, although maybe it's 6:30 to 8:30. It's happening now at any case, and it's happening at City Hall. It's a group that will be deciding on the long-term plan for the city for the next goodness knows how many years, and one of the issues, of course, is the place for campgrounds, of which there is currently none proposed for the city as far as I know. And I believe activist John Golder, who has a number of other interests, and he's talked on the air about other issues, he's particularly concerned about basic civil rights of people with respect to city authorities when they go after poor and homeless people like Donna Dice and Linda LaMaster, who's currently defending, not as an attorney, he's not an attorney, but giving them legal advice and exposing Parks and Rec's bogus ticketing policies that try to run RVs and people who live in their vehicles out of the city. He believes that there should be areas for people to camp in the city and that it has to be provided in the general plan. And won't be unless people show up at meetings like this one that's happening tonight. I just learned about it. It conflicts with my show, so I'm not going to be there probably. But you can, if you want, go down to City Hall, 809 Center Street, and take a listen and have your say. Hopefully it won't be too late. It may be, because I think the time for public comment may be passed, but perhaps not. And it may be a more informal process at the Planning Commission. That's a group appointed by the City Council. You can explain you just heard about it, you'd like to be able to just say something, and perhaps they'll let you if you'd like. Again, that's tonight down at City Hall, and it's a general plan. It's a special meeting of the Planning Commission, and that's, I believe they're meeting again next week for a regular meeting, but this is their special meeting. So, I'm going to kind of run through some announcements and some kind of updates, because suddenly most of the showtime has kind of disappeared. Compliments of our main guest, who I was glad to have on. Mike is a hardworking activist, deeply believes in what he puts out there, and he also has some insight into what the city is doing. I don't agree with him on a lot of issues, and, well, let's put it this way. We kind of have agreement, but I think he lets city bureaucrats get away with a lot, and he asks for a lot less than he should. But there are those who would say, well, people like me who ask for more don't get anything. And maybe he's able to successfully interact with the panjandrums of the city, the grand poobahs, and get somewhere. So that's certainly something to consider and certainly worth having on the show to talk about the issue that he talked about. Let's see here. Looking over my list of announcements. I was going to play over the Democracy Now! Sean Bell incident, but since most people who listen to this show, well, I don't know if you do or not, but many people listen to the show, I imagine, also listen to the Free Radio Santa Cruz, and I think it's also what KUSP rebroadcasts and other television stations rebroadcast Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! And, of course, it's in the papers, too, the Sean Bell protest, the protest over the murder of Sean Bell by police officers, and who are then acquitted, and many people then did a nonviolent sit-down, several hundred people arrested in New York City, I think it was yesterday. Strong stuff. I think we should be considering that with every drug war victim that gets convicted here in Santa Cruz, and maybe there'll be some changes in how the prosecution deals with the drug war. You may talk about whether Steve Wright is a better guy than his opponent in running for the the judgeship, but neither him or his opponent, as far as I know, have come out against the drug war in Santa Cruz and have said that, as you know, judges, they're not going to cooperate with it or even made any kinds of mouthings about it when, you know, there's a huge increase and continuing number of arrests nationwide and locally for use, possession, cultivation of substances, whether that's marijuana or harder drugs, when that has nothing to do with other people, but is simply a form of imposing one person's lifestyle on another, in this case imposing a medieval morality, and a corrupt morality at that, on the entire community, a community that's said no to that time and time again. And yet our DA Bob Lee and the Board of Supervisors and the City Council and the Police Department and the Sheriffs all say yes, and so do the judges and the District Attorneys and the Public Defenders who collude in this process. And it's something that we have to stop. Different proposals have been made at different times, like jury nullification, recognizing that as members of the jury you have a right to say not guilty, period. Even if they don't want you to, if they want to change your mind, you can say not guilty. And you can't be questioned any other place for what you say. And that's a good thing to know, but it's a hard thing to do when you're intimidated by judges and DAs and by other jurors. And you're not allowed to know that that is your power as a juror, that you can vote no because you don't think the prosecution is appropriate, because you don't think the law is right, because you think the whole thing is not worthy of anybody's time and is a form of intrusion on the individual liberty. It's an unconstitutional intrusion. You don't need to follow the little paint by the numbers, add up the figures the way we put them, and then convict in the Nazi-esque way the drug war has been run for the last 40 years in this country and in this county. Not just in this country, but in this county. So, also meeting tomorrow is the Students Against War. It's a group on campus. They are meeting at 5 o'clock. Over here to the website here and see if I can get more information on it. Here we go, Students Against War. And the website I'm going to is Indy Bay. You can Google for Indy Bay, I-N-D-Y-B-A-Y, and then click on Santa Cruz, and you'll get to the calendar section. This is a conference room above the Baytree Bookstore from 5 to 7. Against the war, want to change things, want to be active on campus, come to organize or come to check things out. And that's happening tomorrow from 5 to 7. Students Against War, one of the main groups involved in the anti-war protest to get the recruiters off campus, which I played a snippet from earlier. And hopefully we're going to have a Huff member there trying to encourage Students Against War to join the vigil against two wars, which is to say the Huff event, which we actually sponsored way back in 2003 and have sporadically done since, which tries to link opposition to the war in Iraq to the war on the poor in Santa Cruz, because there are a lot of vets who are homeless and subject to the infamous Santa Cruz City sleeping ban that makes it illegal for a homeless person to be asleep. Not everywhere and anywhere, but even somewhere in Santa Cruz. You're not allowed to be anywhere at all, given the fact that tonight there's space for 40 to 60 people, and there are 1,500 to 2,000 people out there. Mayor Coonerty's refusal to address this issue by moving for a suspension of this law or a direction that police policies change or an acknowledgement that policies have changed in Los Angeles, San Diego, Fresno, and Richmond, because of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling that arresting people for sleeping when there's no legal place to sleep is cruel and unusual punishment. We have a corrupt, or I must say, fascistic-minded city council on this issue. I guess the poorer you get, the more okay it is to treat people like pieces of trash or items that should disappear at the snap of the fingers or on command. Students Against War meets tomorrow, 5 to 7. You might want to check it out up on campus at the Baytree Bookstore. Then on Saturday, May 10th, and again you can find this through the Indy Bay website, there's a non-conventional action training meeting, which looks interesting to me. It's preparation for the Democratic and Republican conventions, and perhaps other broadcasters will be talking about it because it is, again, on the Indy Bay website, and it's probably going to may involve some Free Radio Santa Cruz people, for all I know. I went to a four-hour workshop way back in 1999 run by Katya Komisarek and some other activists around how to deal with tactics at nonviolent tactics at protests and how to resist in demonstrations, how to deal with the police, how to deal with the media. It was very interesting. Farr Mice, the man who put together the Alarm, a weekly newspaper that came out for a while in Santa Cruz in 2002 and 2003, was active in getting that workshop organized. I'm not sure if this is a similar group, but it is happening on May 10th, and it's going to be, if I'm not mistaken, happening 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock. It's a teach-in. It's at the Zami Collective at 807 Laurel Street. That's a familiar address to some of you, 807 Laurel Street. And the details are as follows on Indie Bay. Continued wars, housing foreclosures, and ecological crises have proven that neither docile street marches nor electoral campaigns will solve the problems plaguing our daily lives. We can only have leverage over our rulers by showing them our own power, and we must back our demands by demonstrating that we can interfere with their business as effectively as they interfere with our lives. Santa Cruz people are gathering for an exciting chance to develop skills and social bonds for direct action of all kinds. This will be an opportunity for people to deepen their local connections and strategies for a variety of campaigns, including this summer's Democratic and Republican national conventions. Workshops include media training, affinity groups, self-defense, knowing your rights, and tricks and tools of direct action. We will also be practicing our newfound skills on Sunday, location to be announced. Again, this is Saturday, 1 to 7, the Zami Cooperative, 807 Laurel Street, and it looks like it's free. Unconventional strategies from rebel communities within the empire, direct action training. And there's a website to go to, unconventionalaction.org, capital U, capital A, unconventional action, one word, .org. Check it out. I'm going to try to be there myself, and we can all chat. If you show up, I'll show up too. Or perhaps, well, maybe I can report on it too on Sunday on Free Radio. Another thing I attended this week was a planning meeting for an event coming up on Wednesday, May 14th. That's a week from yesterday. And it has to do with, it's a thing called the Coalition, let me get this exactly right, Coalition on Race, Poverty, Equality, and Justice. And this is apparently been in the works for a number of meetings, six or seven meetings, according to Lloyd Ellis, who called into Free Radio to talk about it on Sunday. There's a flyer being distributed called Overcoming Racism and Building a Racially Just County. And the next meeting, to find out more about it, is actually not, this isn't a planning meeting, this is a public meeting. I actually personally invited the police chief of Scotts Valley. His name is John Weiss. I ran into him about a year ago when we were trying to persuade the Scotts Valley City Council unsuccessfully not to make their laws against the homeless harsher in terms of camping in the parks at night. Weiss is a nice guy, but he's also the police chief, and he also supports bad laws. So, but in terms of his human side and his PR side, he was a nice guy, and he called me back and told me he would be attending this meeting, and as will a number of other people in the Felton, Scotts Valley, San Lorenzo Valley area, for those of you who are up there. It's going to be happening at the Felton Presbyterian Church, 6090 Highway 9. That's the Felton Presbyterian Church, 6090 Highway 9, 630 to 830 on May 14th. And if you want more information, you can contact Wanda Knight. Wanda Knight, in fact, I'm even going to try to give her a call right now to see if we can just get a very brief update on what's happening. I told her that I'd be calling her, and of course, I let myself get hornswoggled here. Maybe we can get a hold of her or give her a call, see if she's around. We only have about 7 minutes left in the show, but hey, sometimes that can be important anyway.
Hello?
Wanda Knight.
Hello?
Wanda?
Oh, was that you calling me?
Are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
I don't hear anybody.
You don't hear anybody. Can you hear me now? Hello? Wanda? Can you hear me? Okay. Hey, Wanda, this is Robert. Robert Norris calling. I'm calling from Free Radio. You got a two-minute blurb if you want to talk. Oh, you're... Let me do this. Let me call you back on another line here. I'll call you right back, and we'll see if we can get you. Okay. Let's see if that phone didn't seem to be working too well. Let's see if we can get a better line here. Again, we're calling Wanda Knight. Now, you can call, too, if you want more information about this upcoming event. Let's see what we got here. We're ringing her now. And let's see. It's two ringy dingies. And I'm afraid we might not have the
right...
Hello, Wanda?
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
I can. We have about 2 or 3 minutes here for the end of the show. I apologize for calling you so late.
Oh, that's okay.
And I know that I'll have a longer show on Sunday, so maybe you'll be around then. We can talk some more. What's happening up in, I guess, there's this meeting coming up next Wednesday, which I just mentioned. John Weiss, the Scotts Valley Police Chief, will be coming to, and, you know, a number of organizations, Resource Center for Nonviolence, I don't know, Amnesty International, UN Association. To me, all the kind of soft, squishy soft liberals who don't really want to get out and deal with real drug war criminals or victims, I should say, and real issues of racial discrimination, but who like to be on the liberal side of things are going to be doing this. But you're a different kettle of fish. You're an African-American woman. You have been subject to police harassment and brutality. You've talked about it on the radio before, and you're a part of this whole organization. So what's cooking on May 14th? Should people show up? What do you suggest?
Yes, I think everybody should show up because everybody has had some kind of injustice have done to them. And I have been living in Santa Cruz for 30 years. Well, in Santa Cruz County, I've been living 21 years up in the valley, from Felton to Ben Lomond to Boulder Creek, where I live right now. And I've been working out there. And I have had experiences with racial discrimination, with racial profiling by the Santa Cruz, by the Sheriff's Department up there, where I got stopped 6 times. In 6 consecutive days for no reason. And when I went to the substation to question the sergeant about it, he told me I was speeding. Then I told him, well, I'm sorry, your officers aren't doing their jobs. And he goes, what do you mean? I said, where's my ticket or citation? I told him, this is DWB, driving while black, brown, or gender, you know, racial profiling. And recently there have been some other incidents that have been happening to some young brown-skinned people, which we'll talk about. It's going to be held at the Presbyterian Church in Felton, 6090 Highway 9, from 6 to 8:30 on Wednesday night.
Great. Now, can people get in touch with you if, let's suppose, they have an incident they want to talk to you about privately, and they don't necessarily want, you know, the police chief of Scotts Valley to know all the details initially, or?
Oh yes, I am also the NAACP representative up there in the valley. They could call me. My cell is 246-0228, area code 831. And we will do things for anonymity or by proxy if people like to have their story told, but without fear of retaliation.
Great. Wanda, I want to talk to you more, and if we had any more time, I would you know, keep you going for another half an hour. But maybe on Sunday morning I can try to reach you?
Yeah, please do, Robert. I would appreciate it very much.
Hey, thank you, and we will be back and talk to you more. Talking with Wanda Knight, who's involved with the Coalition on Race, Poverty, Equality, Justice, and Re-election for Tony Madrigal. Oh, I don't want to say that, for heaven's sake.
Oh.
Don't want to say that. Hopefully it's for more than that, and let's see what happens.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Robert.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Yeah, I mean, I'm skeptical of Madrigal and Simba Kenyatta, anything they're involved with. On the other hand, skeptical does not mean my mind is closed. And in fact, I've put in a little energy, went to their organizational meeting, and tried to get a few people to agree to come to the meeting, the first racial profiling discussion, stories about racial discrimination and so forth, because I think that's good and that's important. I don't know why, if it takes 6 to 8 different meetings to plan such a thing. It kind of smacks of like a Measure K deal, where you're spending lots of energy creating something when you could, in fact, instead be doing something much more simple, like a group that does Public Records Act requests and helps people expose this in a way that would be a much more effective deterrent than, I don't know, pushing the political careers of a few people, which I wonder what's going on. Now, not to say that Tony Madrigal and Simba Kenyatta don't have a sincere interest at some level in this issue, but Madrigal's been on the council for 3 years now and hasn't done diddly squat about racial profiling or discrimination. He's just been savagely attacked because he made a sort of casual comment about it. Anyway, we're going to talk more about this on Sunday. Please come back on Sunday. Check out the Human Rights Organization meeting if you'd like at 2 o'clock on Saturday. It's at the Firefly Cafe, 131 Front Street. If you want to reach me off air, if you've got stuff you want to put on the air, or you've got some comments or some questions, or you have any phone numbers that you want to verify, you may have heard them on the show but not been able to write them down, 423-4833 is the number to call. And I want to thank you for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. And as far as I know, I don't have cancer, so that's good news. I had a colonoscopy today, so everybody can celebrate, and I can at last get something to eat. Talk to you on Sunday.
This is another one of those bandwagon songs. See, we discovered that like people like Bruce Springsteen and John Cougar Mellencamp and everybody, they were doing all these songs about Middle America. And we'd actually been through Middle America in a motorhome, which is the only way to go. And discovered that they didn't know what they were singing about. We figured they flew their big corporate jets in, landed, did a concert, and left. But anyway, they were singing all these songs, and since they'd been signed to a label, we thought we'd do it, which is what the whole bandwagon motif is about. So I thought I'd write a song about Middle America. This is a song about Middle America. It's a love song. It's called Me and Mrs. Middle America. We go to the bank. We run to the cleaners. We hop on a bus. It takes us back home. We set out the plates, we get out the dinners, we're making a fuss, we're making it warm. We loosen a tie, we mix a martini, we say our goodnights to everyone in. We crawl into bed, we shut off the TV, we're closing our eyes, we're dreaming of sin. Middle America, separate sleepers on separate sides. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives. We wake up the kids, we make up the breakfast, the family sits. It's family time. We mix up the tang. We pick out the donuts. We shake up the shits. They're running behind. Me and Mrs. Middle America, beaming at babies for most of our lives. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives. What's the agenda for me and for Mrs.? Just passionate catches and passive restraints. It's so delicious the way that the ladies dismisses your worries and hides her complaints. I like the Mrs. at family Christmas when family dishes are left for the night. Family visits me, Mrs. and sis will persist in resisting their usual fights. We go to the malls, we go to movies. We shine up the shoes on Saturday nights. We go to the club. We go to the alleys. We turn off the news. We turn on the lights. Me and Mrs. Middle America, snapping our towels and flapping our thighs. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives. Me and my honey, we're watching our money. We're losing gin rummy and gaining some weight. Isn't it funny how me and my honey are equally chummy with people we hate? Me and the missus, we both know what bliss is. It's mistletoe kisses and wishes come true. We're never suspicious, not me and the missus. We both know that this is the best we can do. We go to the job, we go to the meetings, we say that we'll vote, but never quite will. We stay on the phone, we threat in the beatings, we send in a note when somebody's ill. Me and Mrs. Middle America, tentative travelers with plenty of slides. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Middle American husbands and wives. Me and Mrs. Middle America, Mother's Day doilies and Father's Day ties.
Me and Mrs. Middle America.
Middle American husbands and wives.
We've been compared to the Roach sisters upon occasion. y'all know who they are, right? Everybody knows who they are. Well, that's what we would like. We would like everybody to know who we are. And so, since we've been compared to them, and we find this, of course, tremendously flattering, we've decided to actually really sound like them, because then maybe we'd have a record label behind us just like them.
Fly, she will die.
Oh, yes. The great sounds of It's a Beautiful Day here on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Uncle Dennis here with you for a few hours tonight, bringing you From the Cream to the Dregs. We're going to explore the music of the 60s and the 70s. We're going to have an environmental update at 9 o'clock and mostly have a good time until then. A little while we'll open the brew of the week. I'll let you know what that is in about 20 minutes or so. And but do stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1, www.freakradio.org. And, of course, donate if you can.
I will try.